everyone. Welcome back to Relax with Animal Facts. I am Steph Wolf, and today I am going to be learning with you about our furry, scaly, or possibly even slimy friends. And in today's case, it is actually going to be a feathery friend of ours, because we are covering the oh-so-wonderful wandering albatross. This, of course, is a very special listener episode dedicated to Cheyenne, who happened to request this awesome creature. And so, Cheyenne, I hope you enjoy your very own episode. This one wouldn't have been possible without your writing in. For how to send in your animal request to have your very own episode, and for all of the facts that were used in this one, you can either go to the show notes or the description where all of that information is there, or you can wait until the end in which I will give some instruction to those things. And if you like Relax with Animal Facts, you can get more of it for only $1 a month through Patreon. A new episode just went live in which we dove deep into the amazing mechanism of bioluminescence. And so you can go to patreon.com/relaxwithanimalfacts or just click the Patreon link in the description if you'd like to listen to more of the show while supporting it. And now let us begin to wind down. I have three exhortations for you before we hop right into the episode. The first is to put on a pair of shoes that I don't think we have actually put on before, those being some boat shoes. They are perhaps not the most flattering pair of shoes, but we are here to look at the wandering albatross, not our feet. And the second thing I encourage you to do is perhaps to recognize where you are carrying some tension. Is it in the head? Is it in the shoulders or the neck? If you are listening to this with somebody else, you might well notice that you carry tension in different places. For me, I always carry tension in my hands and my head, and it is quite difficult to relax when we are stiff as a board. And so I encourage you to even bring up maybe an image of Jell-O in your mind and do your best to impersonate it. Just let go and relax. And my third exhortation to you, dear friend, is that you give your mind permission to wander and journey with me into the colder southern ocean waters where the wandering albatross resides. Now, I think that this episode is a unique one, because usually when we are going out into the ocean, we prepare our scuba gear and we dive in. But today, we are actually going to be staying on the boat and looking out at these albatrosses. And here in this environment, in addition to those fashionable boat shoes, I think a few layers are required to keep us warm. Now, the reason we are here on the southern ocean waters is because the wandering albatross is actually absent from the North Atlantic Ocean. Here in the southern colder waters, there is an abundance of food due to upwelling. And let me just define that word, upwelling. It is basically the upward movement of deeper, colder water. Here in this area, there are pretty strong winds, and they will blow parallel to the coastline. And so the surface water is pushed offshore, and then water is drawn up from the bottom to replace the water that has been pushed away by the wind. And that deeper water that is coming to replace the surface water is very rich in nutrients. And so basically, you have a greater abundance of biological activity, of life, because you have a lot more nutrients to supply it. And so the wandering albatross prefers these very fertile waters that are teeming with life, and of course, fish. Now, we are mostly used to soundscapes that are made purely from outside of us by, say, crickets and birds and the wind. But today we have the pleasure of joining in with our slightly creaky boat. Now, the wandering albatross is the common name of this creature, but their scientific name is Diomedea exulans. This took me a little bit of time to unpack, but the former word Diomedea, which is the genus of albatrosses. This word is taken from the Latin word Diomedius, and that Latin word comes from the Greek word Diomedes, or rather the Greek name Diomedes. It is the name of a legendary Greek warrior. And this warrior, upon returning from his time in the Trojan War, was turned into a bird along with his companions. It is interesting to think that in this purely semantic sense, or just from the meaning of these words, that the wandering albatross can be associated with a mighty warrior. The latter word of their scientific name is exulans. That word exulans comes from a Latin word that means to be in exile. So taking their entire scientific name, it could mean something like a warrior in exile. Now, as we are going to be learning more and more about how the wandering albatross lives their life, we can see how one can garner the idea that they are somehow in exile. Their common name, after all, is the wandering albatross. So this, of course, is a very large seabird, and it is a truly amazing bird because by wingspan, it is number one in the world. It has the single largest wingspan of any bird in the animal kingdom. And so it is the largest extant bird, not by height or by weight, but strictly by wingspan. And these huge wings will allow them to glide for hours and hours without flapping their wings a single time. This lack of a need to flap their wings and just to coast or go on autopilot over the winds of the sea ensures that they do not use a lot of energy in the air at all. And this is precisely the reason why they were given such a name as wandering albatross, or, as regards their scientific name, a warrior in exile. They spend the majority of their life not on land, but really out at sea. Their large wings give them the ability to coast the majority of their life, and so seemingly being in exile over the waters. So their wingspan is about 3.2 meters or 10.5 feet long. That is around double the size of an average human being. And while that 3.2 meters or 10.5 feet is the average, the Guinness Book of World Records claims that the largest wingspan of any living species was an albatross with a wingspan of 3.63 meters or 11 foot 11. The functioning of their wings can be compared to the functioning of sails on a sailboat, basically zigzagging across the wind in order to make progress forward through a headwind. These gliding birds will go down and go up continuously, basically swooping low over these headwinds that are continuously present over the Southern Ocean, and then using the height that they have gained in order to glide down again and gain more distance. This process of flying is something that is known as dynamic soaring, and this mechanism is the one that allows them to flap their wings so sparingly. This is why in a single day the wandering albatross can cover distances of 590 miles, about 950 kilometers, averaging speeds of 25 miles an hour or 40 kilometers an hour. One bird that was tracked circled Antarctica in a mere 46 days. For those of you with a globe at home, you can simply look at how large Antarctica is, and that is an impressive trek, or rather an impressive flight. Now, at the base of their wings, they have something that locks them into place in this outstretched position. This mechanism ensures that the albatross doesn't have to worry about constantly holding their arms out and creating muscular strain. Of course, when the albatross's wings are outstretched and extended, they are not in a resting position. Just like you and I, if we were to hold out our arms in this outstretched position like a bird, at a 90-degree angle, we would be using our shoulder muscles to hold them up continuously. But in the case of the albatross, they have a mechanism that takes that out of the equation in which they can just rest out at that position. For those very long flights, that mechanism is a lifesaver. The wandering albatross has a lot more fibers that are known as slow twitch rather than fast twitch. Birds that flap their wings a good amount or quickly will often have a lot more fast twitch fibers than slow twitch. The slow twitch fibers that the wandering albatross has have the job of basically making continuous adjustments to their wings as they are flying around. And these adjustments are especially small if you compare them to the adjustments needed when a bird is actively flapping their wings. All of these things is what allows a wandering albatross to fly a distance that would be covered by most other birds in a year in a single week or two. Now, one downside of their very special wings, it means they are going to be having a harder time to take off initially than most other birds. When there is little to no wind, those airplane-sized wings are going to have a hard time lifting their body off into the air. The level of difficulty will range on a few factors, like how much they have eaten, for example, and how much wind is present at where they are trying to take off initially, but this is the trade-off for those cruising wings that they have. And considering they can travel over 900 kilometers or over 400 miles every single day, they can travel 75,000 miles or 120,000 kilometers in a single year. This will differ among individual wandering albatrosses depending on certain circumstances, but that is simply astonishing. If it were not for a car, I probably would not travel that amount in my entire life. Now, while they do spend the majority of their life in the air above the ocean, they do land for breeding season. They will go on certain islands in the South Atlantic Ocean, like South Georgia Island, the Crozet Islands, Prince Edward Island, and others. As a Canadian, I take some pride in that the wandering albatross likes PEI. Many people only associate potatoes with PEI, but now they may associate wandering albatrosses in addition to those potatoes. One more reason to visit. And so, in total, this bird is going to live more than 50 years on average. They do not have many natural predators, of course, other than humans who oftentimes interact with them not even intentionally, but they have a capacity to live a very long time. Like many other birds, they look a lot bigger than what they actually weigh, which is just around 12 kilograms or 26 pounds. Like most other birds, they have hollow bones that allow them to be very, very light, of course for the sake of flying, and they are mostly going to be feeding upon fish and squid. There are plenty of these creatures in the ocean, especially in which there are those wellups, where that very nutrient-dense water from the deep is pushed up towards the surface, and so they frequently have an abundance of food. Now, on these super long flights that the wandering albatross goes on, they are going to be close to always active. They are even active during the nighttime. While there is sunshine, they are going to spend their entire time in the air, and at night, while they do not cover nearly as much distance, the wandering albatross has been tracked to still be constantly moving throughout the nighttime, rarely stopping for periods of more than an hour and a half. And so at night, when they are feeding, they sometimes feed in smaller groups, and they will make those shallow dives as they hunt. They will plunge themselves into the water and try to scoop up cephalopods, small fish, and crustaceans. And sometimes the albatross eats so much that it is unable to actually fly. It will just spend some time buoying and floating around in the water until it can fly again. Now, some may ask the question, if they are spending all this time in the air, how is it that they never really need a drink of fresh water? And the answer is a very interesting one. They have a particular gland that allows them to desalinate salt water. For those of you who have ever swam in these salty oceans, you know that you cannot drink that water. It is simply too salty. But the wandering albatross can, by the help of this gland that has a desalination mechanism built into it, that removes the salt from their bodies as they intake salt water. The salt glands are positioned in a place that perhaps is not very intuitive. They are located above the eyes. When the salt is mostly separated from the water, it is then secreted through those ducts that are toward the tips of their beaks. And then they will quickly exhale this salty liquid into a fine mist. And in this way, they have no need for fresh water because they pretty much make their own. And so while they can drink seawater, keep in mind that they are eating a lot of fish and other sorts of creatures, and so they will intake a lot of liquid just through their diet. They will not drink a lot of seawater, but if they ever do, they have a mechanism for it. We put a lot of stress on mechanical digestion before we swallow food by means of chewing with our teeth. But in the case of the wandering albatross, they swallow their prey whole. They can swallow things that are up to 3.2 kilograms, or around 6.5 pounds, which is over 30% of their entire body weight. And they can do this because their digestive system is quite efficient. They have very acidic stomachs at a pH of about 1.5, and so whatever they eat is very rapidly digested by this strong stomach acid, a stomach acid that is similar to that of vultures who eat a lot of carrion, and so even their digestive system is very well suited to their environment. Now, the adult albatrosses are a black and white color, while the small or baby albatrosses are brownish. Now, one other sense that is stressed in the wandering albatross is actually their sense of smell. This maybe doesn't come very intuitively, but the wandering albatross, in fact, has one of the biggest olfactory bulbs, which is used for smelling, of any bird. So those strong winds on the ocean will actually carry scents into their nose, and it will allow them to identify perhaps where there is some smelly squid. They, of course, have very strong vision as well, and so these two senses are going to work in tandem to give them plenty of information as to where to dive and get some fresh food. Now, at around 11 years of age, the wandering albatross will look to have albatrosses of their own. And so after they land finally on one of those islands that we spoke about earlier, the males will court the females with displays and vocalizations, and some of their displays can be very, very complex and elaborate. And these creatures are typically monogamous, meaning that the male and the female albatross will mate together for life. And they will normally meet again every 2 years, where the breeding season starts in early November until March. We see that many creatures come together in the springtime, but in the case of the wandering albatross, it is during mostly the winter time. They will gather on these large colonies on those remote islands and make their nests from a combination of grass and mud. They will typically have just one egg at a time that will hatch after an 11-week period. And once the chick is born, the male and female will take turns going out to hunt and who stays home with the chick. It's interesting that we see this similar mechanism in creatures like penguins, for example, in which the male and the female will take turns doing different things. And now let us move on to the name of the animal. Albatross. What does it mean, or where does it come from? Well, this word is used to denote large, web-footed seabirds of the petrel family. It was first coined in the 1670s in its usage, and its etymology is not exactly clear. There are some etymologists that think the albatross comes from an Arabic word, perhaps from a Portuguese word, but we know that the spelling was likely influenced by the Latin word albus, which simply means white. The albatross is a mixture of white and black in adulthood, and so this would make sense. English sailors by the 17th century began to use this word to denote a larger seabird that was not found in the North Atlantic at all, as is the case today. Now, because the albatross frequently follows ships and boats in order to maybe get scraps from people, a superstition kind of came to life from sailors. No matter how many hundreds of miles or kilometers they would go, that same albatross would be there with them. For those of you that are into poetry, Samuel Coleridge wrote a poem called Rime of the Ancient Mariner, and this really propelled the albatross into a position of interest. It is a very good poem, and so if you like poetry, I would encourage you to read it. But now let us move on to the charity of the episode. Many a time, the animals that we cover don't actually have any existing charities, but in the case of the wandering albatross, this is not the case. There is an albatross task force, which sounds pretty cool and intense. There is an albatross task force that is led by BirdLife International. I like the name Albatross Task Force. BirdLife International basically works on board certain vessels. They show crews simple ways to not get in the way of seabirds, and they work in the governmental realm to implement regulations and change certain practices for the betterment of albatrosses. They worked in South Africa in 2006, and today there is a 99% reduction in albatross deaths. Things like haphazardly strewn out fishing lines and whatnot can be very difficult for a wandering albatross to go through without being caught. And BirdLife International has been working to reduce those accidents, and seemingly very successfully. And so if you want to be included in their mission of helping albatrosses, you can go to birdlife.org and become a member. And now let us move on to a review of the show. For today's review, L1390 is writing all the way from Great Britain, and L writes, "Hello, my name is Alex. I am an animal lover and interested in pursuing a career into veterinary and medicine. Your podcast has helped me relax so much when I thought nothing could. Thank you. You have a calming voice that is amazing to listen to and relax to. My suggestion for an animal is the spider monkey, my favorite animal since I was 6 and studied for 5 years. I think many interesting facts would be found for the spider monkey. Thank you." Thank you, Alex, for taking the time to leave such a kind review. I am so happy that you are part of the show and that you enjoy it. This spider monkey is also a fantastic animal to cover, but given that you have studied it for 5 years, I doubt I could tell you something that you did not already know. However, given that I am very interested in monkeys, I too would love to learn more about the spider monkey along with all of you listening. And so if the show has helped you in any way and you want to take a couple of moments to give back, leaving a review is truly one of the quickest and most effective ways of giving back to the show. But your listenership truly is gift enough. For those of you that would like to request your very own animal episode, you can do so by sending your animal request to relaxwithanimalfacts.com by clicking on the Animal Request tab. To request your very own animal episode, you can go to relaxwithanimalfacts.com and click on the Animal Request tab. If you want to reach me for any other reason, you can send an email to relaxwithanimalfacts@gmail.com, or you can send a message to relaxwithanimalfacts on Instagram. If you would like an intro-free version of this episode and many more, along with exclusive episodes, you can do so by going to patreon.com/relaxwithanimalfacts or by clicking on the Patreon link down in the show notes. All of the facts that were used in this episode come from biologydictionary.net, coolantarctica.com, factanimal.com, birdlife.org, oceanexplorer.noaa.gov, and etymonline.com. Without these resources, I of course wouldn't have had access to the breadth of facts I had today, and so I encourage all of you to go to those in the show notes and explore more to your heart's content. What an amazing creature we have covered today. The largest wingspan of any bird on planet Earth. Isn't that special? from just looking at them floating on the water or standing on the land. They look unassuming and very ordinary, but as is almost always the case, there is so much treasure to be discovered about them. Thank you all for taking the time to join me on this journey today. I hope that you have enjoyed this episode as much as I have, and I look forward to seeing you on the next podcast episode with the next animal. Take care.